Happy notes, just homework, right? There was homework from last week, correct? And this is Shimshon part 3. There was the homework from last week. What was? Usually homework means for me, but everybody's welcome to Judd as well. What was the? Do you remember this? There was a question that was asked. Remember? Anyway, so I'll remind you there was the name of the angel was Peli. That was the name of the angel that they meet. And there were a number of positions suggested for that. One was that it's hidden, or another one that it means to say the idea of articulation. This is a seat right here if you need. There's articulation, which is related to Nazirus. But in the next pasuk, it talks about how the angel ascends miraculously. And the word it uses is kihifli. He acted wondrously. So I think it was Eric or Judy who mentioned the idea that suggested. That perhaps his name is Wondrous. So I actually found that one of the Farshim points out that, in fact, the Arizal says that whenever Hashem relates to a woman who hasn't given birth and gives her a child, the word used, at least Kabbalistically, is Pele. So interesting that perhaps the angel's name might be, in a certain sense, Wondrous because of his mission of giving the child, as well as his miraculous departure as well. So I thought that was just very fascinating. So that's just to conclude on last week's episode. Now, this week we're going to start off with a little bit of Nazirus, and I'd like to try to get as far into Perek Yudalet as possible with the first story of Shimshon. First thing we have to discuss is just in terms of just an overview, a little bit of thinking about the whole incident. We've been told that Shimshon's a Nazir. The only problem is that, as we know, as we did at the end of last week's share, there are actually three components to being a Nazir. One is not shaving, one is not drinking or eating any form of wine or strong intoxicating drinks, and number three is coming in contact with dead people. So the question really is that when describing the whole Nazirus to Shimshon, it seems like the part that's left out, and that part is that he becoming in contact to dead people. What's added, which you may think is might be you have to consider, is not she, the wife of Manoach, the mother of Shimshon, is not allowed to eat tamei things. Now, nobody's allowed to eat tamei things, but specifically for Nazir, I think there's a higher level. The Mefarshim said that there's a higher level of things, that more stringency that she couldn't eat.
Was Shmuel also considered a Nazir? Nazir min habetem.
Who was this?
Shmuel.
Oh, interesting. So Shmuel also was a Nazir, and I don't remember him being talked as a Nazir from the Beten.
Because he also killed.
Right. So you're right. He kills Agag, right?
Right.
So that's an interesting thing. I had not thought about that. It is interesting to actually sort of parallel some of the Shmuel and Shimshon stories, which we're going to do a little later on, is because obviously Shmuel is also the author of the Shimshon story. So it's very noteworthy, therefore, any details which he will describe in a certain way which relates to his life, and Shmuel's also Nazir, is also very telling in that regard. But I don't remember specifically on that point.
What makes you think that Shmuel was a Nazir?
It's just the parallel of what he was going to do. He was special.
But he wasn't.
I'm just asking.
Yeah. Right. No, it says that she says that my son will be Kaddish Mibet, and he'll be dedicated to Hashem. And in the Pesukim, he serves in the Beis Hamikdash, the Mishkan, at the time. Right. But Chazal said that also he had Nazirus, and I'm not sure what. I don't remember where the indications are from. I'd like to find out. Yeah, I'd have to go back into the details of that. But Mohammed, right? So it seems like one of the details is left out, and in fact, on this particular point, the Rambam in fact says that there are two tracks of Nazirus in general now. So this is important to us, because this actually Shimshon is now creating, or rather the angel is creating a new form of Nazirus, which is a second track from the Torah, the way he understands it. So let's take a look at the Rambam. It's on page 13. The Rambam is describing, this is in the Rambam in Hilchos Nazirus, describing Nazirus in general. This is in the center of the page. It's the Rambam Nazirus 3:13. In Halacha Yud Gimel, the Rambam describes as follows: Shimshon lo haya nazir gamur. Shimshon was not a complete nazir. Sharei lo nadav nazir ela hamalach hifrishu min atumo. Because he, it's the third box in the page, in the Rambam in Halacha Yud Gimel. So the what's different about him is that unlike a regular Nazir, which the Torah talks about expressing, articulating, bringing yourself into it, Shimshon in a certain sense was receptive. He was made into a Nazir. That's number difference number one. V'ketzel hayadinoi. What was his particular way of acting? Or the way he was expected to act? Haya asur b'yayin. He could not drink wine. Asur b'tiglachas. He could not shave. But umutar li'itamele mesim. But he could come in contact with dead people, which is a good thing because he killed many, many, many people. But this is a halacha which is from tradition. So we know this, that from tradition, that this wasn't an exception, but in fact its own category. And therefore, lefichach, this is in halacha yudalad, the next paragraph, mi she'amar hareni nazir k'shimshon, harezen nazir mina tiglachas mina yayin le'olam. If a person, therefore, when trying to make himself a Nazir, doesn't use, we'll call it, the regular approach, he pulls on the Shimshon approach of it, he actually gets that idiosyncrasy, which is that he doesn't have the Isser of becoming in contact with dead people. And it's the Olam. And it's eternal as well. He cannot shave for 12 months like regular Nazirim. Umutzal hitamele mesim, and he can become in contact with dead people. V'im omar lo niskavanti. I'm just going to skip this line. Just the details about which particular kavani he had. But at the end of the line, umisha nadar nazir k'shimshon. If a person were to make an nazirus like Shimshon, trying to opt into this option, einu yachol lehisha'el al nidroi. He's not able to get out of it. He's not able to ask and undermine that articulation. Because his nazirus was eternal. This is an exception to the rule. Any neder you make, notwithstanding a few exceptions which are more particularly stringent, let's say if it's done in public, on public standing. But regularly, if you make a neder, and nazirus is a subcategory of a neder, you're able to ask and find that there was a particular reason you didn't have intention for, or there was regret, and you're able to undermine that and take away that neder. Nazirus Shimshon would be different, because the very nature of it is eternal. So just like, on the one hand, it is somewhat more lenient in the sense that he can have contact with dead people, but it's much more all-encompassing in the sense that it's lifelong. So it's just interesting how this is codified. This is not just necessarily just a story and perhaps an exception. This is actually a different track as it's seen in the Rambam in terms of these halachas. So, yes.
It's always puzzled me, like in this, in Shmuel's case, in some of the Nevi'im. What happened to Bichurah? How could these people...
To the free will.
How could these people be determined... Before they're even born, that they're going to have this test?
Well, I would ask a question in a different way. Just I would say like this. I'm more happy understanding that certain people have, we'll call it, different spiritual DNA than others. Because we already have Kohanim and Leviim who are born into a certain thing which they cannot opt out of, and that requires them to act in a certain way, live in certain places, and have restrictions in certain forms of lifestyle. What I would ask your question is in the way that it's going, in the way that you see that Shimshon's going to be living his life, a number of the things that occur in his life would seem that it's very much forcing him into a corner in certain respects. So I would ask you a question about free will of Shimshon, which is definitely a very good question. I wouldn't ask it in respect to the Nazirus, because I would say that there's particular instances which it becomes even more expressed, this lack of free will in his life. The Nazirus to me doesn't bother me as much as the spiritual status of an individual.
Even Shmuel, he didn't have a choice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does everybody have a free will if a child's born as a Kohen?
That's predetermined because of when,
where you're born, no matter where you're born.
Everybody's
predetermined.
What is it have to do with him?
Oh, so the yeah. free will.
He's a person.
Depends where and
he's
where
a person. However, the agreement with his mother.
But that didn't involve his agreement. He was.
I understand what you're saying.
No, so I would. So just to clarify something, this is just something. This is just an important concept in general. Is that the way the Gemara describes it, is that Hakol Bidei Shemaim, everything is in the hands of heaven, chutz miyiras shemaim, except for the fear of heaven. Now, what does that mean? This is just expanded. This means to say that you're dealt certain cards in life, right? That means to say that means to say physiologically, emotionally, intellectually, in terms of family, at least for the first 20 years of your life generally, in terms of surrounding, you're dealt certain cards which you don't have the ability to change up to a certain point in your life. What you do have the chance to change financially, just to, and economically, but there are certain things which you do have control of, and that is how to deal with those things and deal with the deck that you're dealt. So now this is obviously a much more complex topic, but in a certain sense, part of the cards that he's dealt is in zeros. That doesn't impinge on the fact that he has the ability to choose whatever he wants to do within this. He can choose not to be a Nazir, and that would be an expression of his free will as well. That it just means to say that he has certain restrictions in his life which other people don't have. That you're questioning that as that point, but it doesn't necessarily affect his free will. Which is
Cohen him also has the right to totally ignore it.
Exactly. So that's the expression of their free will, whereas the cards are dealt all the situation.
But a person who's a Kohen, you see many doctors who are named Dr. Cohen.
Okay, so
they
does that mean
have, yeah, they're, a Kohen has the ability to ignore all the scriptures.
Right.
I'm not saying it's right, but that's Bechira.
That's the Bechira, yeah.
Right, exactly. So that's where it comes to a four, in terms of what he does with it. But let's call this a destiny or a legacy. So Hashem says, I've got a specific destiny in mind with you. Now your question is, are you going to play to the tune or not? And we can actually even question if he did. That's something we should take a stance on maybe. This is just important in terms of just thinking about how his Naziris operate as a different thing. Now, there are just a few points on this. With your permission, I'd like to just go through three major approaches, just so understanding how this Naziris is important to Shimshon as a person. Okay, so I'd like to, with your permission, go through the Ralbag, the Abarbanel, and the Maharal, who all comment on this Naziris and the importance it has in the life of Shimshon, and why this is important to us. Okay, so on that note, the next paragraph is the Ralbag himself. And you'll see this occasionally, by the way, that the Mefarshei HaPshat will stop to insert a thesis or a theory. So we try to pull out these ones. This is where the Ralbag discusses this. This is the very beginning of the story, when the first message is being given to the wife of Manoach that she has certain restrictions to keep. So it says as follows. V'lozeh, we already have this on page 13, it's the last box. And the message, and with this, the message came to the wife of Manoach, Shehi Hara, that she will become pregnant or is pregnant already, Vetelet Ben, and she will give birth to a son, Vuhu Yachel Hashias Israel Mia Plishtim, and he will begin to save the Jews from the nation of Israel from Plishtim.
So is that why that's why he's mutter with coming close to dead people? I mean, if he would
perhaps
have a different destiny.
Maybe that might be part of the game plan. Right, exactly. Right. That's an interesting point, meaning ahead of time.
Well,
this relates a little bit to the idea of the pre-knowledge here. Maybe the Plishtim weren't really in control of the Jews. Let's play devil's advocate. Maybe they weren't in control. But the message of these two things were put together, meaning maybe the Plishtim were not currently in control, but in the future. But it puts these two ideas together, that she's going to have a child, and that the Plishtim will be in control of the nation of Israel. Why? V'hu shekvar yiyu Yisrael tachas haPlishtim. Because it will happen that in the future that they will be in the hands and Hashem Shon will save them, the two together. And because it was known to the creator of the world, the person who said and the being that said that the world was created, that Hashem Shon in the future is going to follow his eyes after many ladies, as we're going to see, hopefully starting today, and he will find his downfall via them. Hashem, in wisdom, made it so. Hashem therefore sort of put into the system a prevention method. V'lozer rotza shiye nazir elokim. He wanted Shimshon to be a Nazir. Why? Ki hahimna mishtias yayin mo'il mo'od lozer ha'inyan. Because not drinking wine is something which is very helpful in the matter of controlling who you're going to be running after. Kamram kolaroya esotabi kilkula yazir atzma minayayin. As we know, that the juxtaposition in the Torah of the section of Sota, a woman who is accused of being of having a relationship outside of her husband, is directly followed by the Nazir. Why? Because a person who sees such an incident should therefore take on Nazirus, because how that is a remedy for that particular person in terms of relationship with women, in terms of following what he lusts after. So therefore, it's interesting. This is what we'll call it preemptive Nazirus, right? As opposed to post facto, when a person sees, this is preemptive, and that's why Shimshon's different. And this is why it was required that his mother should prevent drinking wine at the time of pregnancy. But in terms of this, clearly not drinking wine is going to obviously put a person in a much straighter form of mindset. Therefore, perhaps it's going to save him from certain incidents. And he warned her against eating any form of impure things, to teach her about the sanctity of this child who will be born, because this will be what remains in order for her to bring up this child in holiness. And therefore, it should be the paradigm, it's sort of the lesson. If she's supposed to act in this way, it should be the way that when she brings him up, not only should she bring him up in with these restrictions, but more than that, she should now bring him up in a way which is detached from the worldly matters, in an attempt to prevent him from what his nature will be. And for this reason, gam kein rotza, this is important. Why he was not allowed to shave his head? To show his holiness. Because this also prevents a person for in terms of sexual interaction. This is something which is going to put a person further away from these issues. The Fimashi Efshar, as much as possible. I'm not sure if that means to say just in terms of not being attractive, or actually he's talking physiologically. I'm not sure on what level he's referring to there. The Imshibozer Inyan Mavoli Inyan Hagvura. And also, he says, the fact that he cannot cut his hair somehow relates to his strength. It relates to his strength. How do we see this? Rotzelama Godol Hasear, he's having his long hair. Elo Shiro Uishiloya, by the way, sorry, just to stop at this point. How do we know? What is the proof in the text that, as we're going to see, that the hair is related to his strength? Because the moment he cuts it, he loses the strength. So it says, obviously the Naziros is related to...
But he knew that.
What was that?
He knew that. Shimshon knew
that. Okay, so when we get there, we're going to discuss why it was that he told her, and what he actually thought was what he thought it was dependent on. Maybe he thought it was dependent on something else as well. Ela sheroi shelo ya'alim mimena she'ashem chidesh bo gvuras nosefes. But he says, but you should also realize that he also had, in addition to the power he had from his hair, he also had what we call divine strength. Mimnei ha'nazirus, because the nazirus she'ashelo yechayva gadol ha'seira lefia teva, because the growing the hair will not give you totally the strength which he had. And he says that you see the moment that he cut his hair, that he lost it, and this cannot be if it was just from the strength of the hair. And he goes on to describe in the next few lines, he has some sort of, we'll call it, 800 years ago physiological information about how hair is related to strength, but if you lose your hair, the strength dissipates slowly. So the fact that he lost it immediately shows you that there's something else going on over there as well. So the Ralbag understands, I just don't want to, the words are... His hair was cut and he lost it. So, yes, you're exactly right. So meaning...
It was quick.
Yes, but when his hair was cut, that's a good point. That's an interesting point. Somehow it seems that that having his hair cut is related to his losing his strength. But he seems to understand that there was a natural part of the hair causing strength, and also there was a supernatural, which is why it affected it immediately, as opposed to a person who loses his hair would dissipate slowly. That's the way he understands it. So the Ralbag understands that there's two components over here. However, on this point, this point is a point of contention. So just to recap, the Ralbag understands that his Nazirus was preemptive, because what he could have become without Nazirus would have been much worse. Hashem is creating a person who is so involved in the matters of this world that would it not be for a Nazirus, something even worse perhaps could happen in terms of the way he lived his life. And more than that, the hair sometimes is related to his strength. On this point, the Abarbanel vehemently disagrees. So you just flip the page to page 14, you'll see these are actually in the original texts of the Abarbanel on the right and the Maral on the left. The Abarbanel says as follows. On the right, he first quotes the Ralbag, as you can see at the top of the column. And I'm going to start just after his quotation of the Ralbag, starting from the seventh line in, and it's after a comma which says "Udvarav baze klog." Okay, so this is again, we've seen the style of talking. His words in this matter are nothing. All right, hevel hema, they are empty. Maasei tatuim. These are play games. Right, ki ein giluach aser machlish v'lo naziros mar be'agvura. There's no connection between cutting your hair and becoming weaker, or naziros and strength. He says, just get this clear. There's no physical correlation over here. V'imra ino, and if we see b'shimshon shesar mimena gvurasa b'giluach asa'ara, if we see that at the moment that he cut his hair, he lost his strength. This was not a natural occurrence, but rather in the way that Hashem wanted it to be such. Yan of Yan, because and for only this reason, he should have kept his Nazirus, when he took this mission from away from himself, Nimkar Biyadisha, he was sold in the hands of women. And when he told her the secret of God, and this caused him to have his hair cut, it was obviously necessary that Hashem should leave him. Meaning this was all on a spiritual plane, nothing to do with the physics. I don't see what this word is here. That his enemies were, I'm not sure what that word is, I'll go back to the original text, hopefully, and get back to you on that. Aval kafia emes, really, in truth, rotza akel yisparach, Hashem wanted, sheshimshon mimei imo, that Shimshon from the womb, yihye nazir, he will be a nazir. Why? Kadesh yishma minayayin, or kadesh yihye mizgoy mischalef, that is, the oyev lemezak aplishtim, kumashe kasavti. Really, the reason why he is a Nazir is that he should be the exact opposite paradigm to the Plishtim. He should be the type of person who is the exact opposite nature to the Philistines. As he discussed before, he talks about the Philistines are very drink-ridden and a barbaric people. V'gam l'siba acheres. And what's another reason for this? V'hi, and that is, l'fi sh'aya galoy l'fonav v'advarim hazarim sh'aya asid l'shimshon asa. So, coming back to this idea that Hashem knows what he's going to be involved with. Rotza yisparah sh'lo yachshav adam sh'yeh ma'aseh shechrus. We, looking back on that, should not consider his actions as the actions of a drunkard. Interesting idea. Meaning, we see what he does, and we think, how could a human being do such things? Maybe he was just, maybe he just spent all his life drinking, and that's why he did it. So says Hashem, I'm going to make him a Nazir. He's going to be a Nazir so that you realize that everything he does is with precision and decision. And that's why he should be a Nazir from the Beten, from the womb. He should also not be able to cut his hair. His locks should be black like a raven, as if he is mourning the subjugation of the nation of Israel at this time. That the Plishtim, the Philistines, are the rulers, because of this, he will therefore be the person to take advantage of them. Which is just a fascinating thing. Really, this is coming out of left field. Probably, you know, this is not something you don't hear so often. He understands that Shimshon is being set up as a leader who's the exact opposite of the Plishtim. He's the person who doesn't drink. He's the person who's not just doing this as a barbarian running around rampantly, but he is doing things with precision as the agent of God. And he is doing it as the person mourning the state of the people of Israel with his long hair. Just a fascinating approach, completely separate, completely a different direction from what the Ralbag was saying, the Ralbag trying to bring the two roads, his leadership against the and his power, and trying to put that into the same road as the Naziris. Just a fascinating different take on this.
I don't think the Ralbag would disagree with the first part of this.
No, not necessarily.
That this was Me'alatim.
For sure. The Ralbag says, in addition, there's a physical aspect, which the Ababonel is even denying that aspect of it. The Ababonel does not see it.
What year is the Ralbag in?
The Ralbag is living, in, if I'm not mistaken, 1300s. I mean, you get the exact dates. And the Abarbanel, who lived actually just at the Don Abarbanel, lived through the end of the Spanish Inquisition, actually. He was the minister of finance, if I'm not mistaken, in Portugal, and then moved to Spain. And very, very illustrious and prolific. So we're talking about at least another 150 years later. And now finally, just to bring it a little closer here, perhaps on a more spiritual plane, is the Maharal. I just want to share different perspectives because we described what his Naziris was. So what does it actually mean? Finally, to conclude with this is the Maharal. In the left column, again, this is from his book. This is the Chidush Agadot, the way he explains the different narratives in the Gemara, which are not halachic. So it says that he says as follows. I'm starting from the second line. The first line is a quotation of the Gemara. Da, you should know, ki inyan Shimshon umadregosa, the matter of Shimshon and his lofty level, she'anazir mi betanimo, that he was a Nazirite from the womb. Va'anazir kosov etzlo, it's said by the Nazir, kadosh ye gadel perasa arosha. This is the Torah talking about Naziris, that the growth of his hair will be holy. That's the way the Torah describes it. The pererosha, the growth of his hair will be holy. Nimtzeit is, it comes out of this, ki harosh hu kli shesam ha'achan lakabel kedushas ha'nazir. The head must be the place in which that is the tool of the body which is most prepared to receive holiness of Naziris. V'lakach, ksiv ki nezer elakov al rosho. Where is the crown of his Naziris? Is on his head. By the way, just the imagery of this is just fascinating. The Torah calls it the Nezer Elokov al Rasha. The crown of God is on him, which is also related to the word Naziris, Nezer and Nazir, and his long hair. Just if you think about the imagery of this, of what the Torah is drawing out there. V'od ksiv v'kadesh es Rasha b'yamahu. At the end of the Naziris process, he sanctifies what? His head again. V'ukomo keter haketer. It is like a crown. The crown is what separates the king from the people. When you see him walking around, the crown is that which separates and distinguishes the king. Therefore, that's why by the Nazir, what separates him is the crown of God on his head, which is his hair. What does holiness mean? It means to say separate or distinct in your holiness. From things which are not the same level of sanctity. More than this, hagufaniyot, and here a nazir is separate from the bodily lusts. Sheko b'nei adam heim bale guf. Generally, we all experience certain lusts or pulls or desires because we're human. And nazir is separate from this. V'zen nivdal min ha'olam, parush min ha'yayin, shutav aleinai v'nechmad lamare. He's also separate from wine, which is something which is enticing both physically, emotionally. V'lakach k'siv, kinezer alakav al rosha. What does it mean that he wears the crown of God on his head? Rotze lamar, ki hu kadosh v'nivdal me'akol. He is separate from everybody else. K'mo ha'melech shu nivdal me'kol, like a king is separate. Omnam, nevertheless, Ma shetola adavar barosh. What does it mean that it's dependent on his head? Mibnegi arosh sham kochot habilti gufaniot. The head is the place which is the cerebral seat, the place in which is most separate from one's bodily lusts. Shiraui lahem akdusha. That is the place which is fitting for holiness. Sheka asher hu nivdal min haguf. When a person becomes separate from his body, Hakochos abilti gofaniot mekablim kedusha elokim v'zeh kedushas harosh. When a person is able to tame down the physical and the gross and the coarse, he's able to appreciate the subtle, the ethereal, and the intellectual. Right, which is found where the seat is in the head. V'ne'emar sa'ar rosho la'ashchis osam. V'ne'esar sa'ar rosho la'ashchis osam. You cannot destroy the hair on his head. Mipnei shekol davar kadosh eno baal hefsed. Anything which is in the head, in the cerebral, is indestructible. V'lakach asur l'hashchis asam. Symbolistically, you cannot cut the hair of your head to remind you of the eternal or the eternal or the sublime nature of that which comes out of the head. V'shimshon ha'ya mukhan namal azot, and Shimshon was prepared for this level, B'yoser mikol adam, more than any other person, akava kudush azos, v'zeh ha'yo ha'kwach Shimshon v'gvurasai. This was the strength of Shimshon, ki ha'davar shehu guf, chalash v'tash v'umit pa'el. His body was weakened and not the main part, not the main act, it was acted upon. Aval ha'davar shehu b'yotzi guf, ena mis pa'el. V'mashu b'shimshon kudush alakis she'ya nazir, rather, his strength came from a divine source, meaning it's the complete marriage of opposites, in a certain sense, in Shimshon. Because a Nazir in general is the cerebral ascetic individual at least for a period in his life. He lives in his head. He grows his hair. He wears this crown which separates him from the rest of people who have all these desires. Yet at the same time, he has this divine strength in the same body, which is this fascinating odds, all in one place. So these are three different, just different perspectives, which are all perhaps going into relating to different aspects of Shimshon. This last one being somewhat more of a relating to the more spiritual workings of Nazirus itself. With that, I apologize for going through everything inside, but I think it's sometimes worth it to, you would correct me if I'm wrong, to sort of see the way that they draw out their arguments, and for sure draw out the arguments. With that, I want to say the questions. I'd like to just begin Perek Yudalet so we can get into the new section of the text about the Nazirus. Now, there's obviously some aspects of this that we're going to have to come back to, because when we get to his strength at the end and trying to understand how it relates to the hair cutting, we're going to reinvestigate exactly what he was thinking at the end of his life. So just turning to page 3 to get a start on Perek Yudalet. This is Shimshon is now born. He has this ruach of Hashem, this spirit of God, which is ringing in front of him like a bell, or incidentally, as we described in the last Perek. And finally, Vayarit Shimshon Timnasa. This is Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Aleph, that Shimshon descends to Timna. Vayar isha b'timnasa, he sees a woman in Timna, ibnos plishtim, from the daughters of plishtim. By the way, what else occurs in Timna? What other incident in the Torah, I'll give you a clue, Bereishis, the book of Bereishis, occurs in Timna. Who else goes away from his family to a place called Timna? And there's a woman there as well.
Yehuda,
right? So Yehuda also goes to Timna. But over there, incidentally, the word used to describe his movement towards there is vayal, and he went up. We'll have to just pay attention. I'd like you to keep a close count on the word vayered in the next few psukim, the word going down. Okay.
Why does he go to Timnath? Doesn't say.
It doesn't say. We're taken completely out of context. We don't even know how old he is. Right, we don't know the reasons, but we do know that something about it, either physically or spiritually, is descent. That's important for us. Okay, is a descent.
What does it say? Bit Timnath.
He saw into. Oh yes, yeah, so I'm not sure about that. Like, that's a good question. I'm not sure. Usually, it's if you're going to a place that is the.
So that was the episode with Tamar.
Yes, this is the episode. This is the parallel episode of Tamar over here.
That's not a good town.
That doesn't sound like a good town, but. One should realize that there's the, you just realize something important over here. Is Yehuda's going to Timnah, Yehuda's relationship with Tamar is the product of Mashiach. Okay? The product of Mashiach. This is something important because there are messianic backgrounds and motifs in Dana over here as well. So just to put that on the table.
To clarify again,
because it may seem sometimes in the complexities actually is the outgrowth is actually something very positive. So we have him going down to Timnah. We don't know why. We know it's a descent. He goes to tell his parents. I saw a woman with Timnasa in Timnasa. It sounds like the place is called Timnasa, actually. Timnah, the place is called Timnasa. That's sorry, just to clarify that. So all those quotes Timnah earlier.
No,
because it's actually, I'm just looking at it. There are three times it's used in these two psukim. It's Timnasa in each time.
That's correct grammar.
Right, the first time, but it seems like the way he's describing it, it's actually the city's name is Timnasa. I'll do a little research on this, but it sounds like it's called Timnasa in this case.
It's a grammatical way of writing it.
Right. But over here, yes, I'm not sure actually on that point.
It is intriguing that he's going back and telling his parents.
Yeah, well, I'd like to. I would like to just actually conclude with his with actually the response he has. I'd like to conclude the response to his parents. He obviously is very upfront about this, and he relates to his parents and says, he says, I saw this lady in Timnah, Mimnos Plishtim, from the daughters of the Philistines. Take her to me as a wife, meaning marry her. Yeah, he wants to marry her. By the way, does Jewish marriage affect it's called Kedushim Tofsim. Does it take effect halachically when marrying a non-Jewish person?
I don't think.
Does not, right? So the fact that he's saying kechul, which is a legal term in halachic literature, which means to say Kedushim, marriage, means to say that obviously he has intent of converting her, right? Just for this to actually work on a halachic, level. Okay?
They wouldn't accept
right?
her.
Now, their responses, as any Jewish parents would say, would be, there's very nice bubala. There's very good nice Jewish girls around, right?
So
can't you find?
This is ancient, correct?
Right. We've all heard this. We've all heard this in different forms and fashions. But this, the answer, and I'll leave you with the answer. And this is actually there's something devastating about this about this as well. Yes, Vayomer Shiv Shanel Aviv. He says to his father, "Osa kachli ki yashra bena. Take me for. I'd like to marry her." Because she is fitting in my eyes. There's something very terrifying about this answer, and that is, he's only responding to one person. Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't
mm-hmm.
respond to his mother.
Mm-hmm.
He says he comes to his mother and his father. When they ask him, he only responds to his father. The Lev Aaron points out that his mother would not be able to understand this. It would be too painful to be able to understand what he's saying now. For whatever reasons that we're going to discuss in the next psukim that he's doing, intentionally or not intentionally, in all the plans that is going to be that he has in mind with this marriage, his mother would not be able to understand. His mother, who from pregnancy brought him up to be this holy child,
this is beyond her.
This would not be something she could understand. He doesn't even talk to her. The conversation doesn't even continue, which is devastating. The continuation of this conversation.
But he initially goes to her also.
Right. But when it comes down to it, he's not continuing speaking to her about this.
I mean, I'm not sure exactly, or she could have taken herself out of it.
Or she could have taken herself out of it.
Way to say, you know.
Right, but it does sound like they do go down to Timnah in the next little bit. So I'm not sure to what degree she might have just walked out at that point in time, for just for this conversation. But it's something to be aware of. Right. So. This is something we're going to need to consider as we continue, because obviously he has something in mind, and.